All right, we're beginning here with Masechet Avodah Zarah. Masechet Avodah Zarah, as the Balei Tosafot point out, is found here in the Zikin, because it really continues what we learned in Masechet Sanhedrin with regards to Avodat Kochavim, Mazalot, and the Mishnayot that dealt with Avodah Zarah in Sanhedrin. The only thing is that we had in between that Makot and Shavuot, because those are really appendixes to Sanhedrin. They're really a continuation of the protocols of Beit Din. So we have Sanhedrin, Makot, Shavuot, which are a unit. And then now we moved on to Avodah Zarah, really as a continuation of that which we saw in Masechet Sanhedrin. Mishnah begins, Lifnei Dehem Shel Ubdei Kochavim, before the holidays of the Ubdei Kochavim, Shlosha Yamim, for 3 days, Asur Laseit Velateit Imahem, you are restricted from conducting, we're going to translate it loosely as business with them, lehashilam, to lend things to them, vilishol mehem, or to borrow things from them, lehalvotam, to lend things to them, vilubot mehem, or to borrow from them, lifuran, to pay off indebtedness to them, vilifroa mehem, or to accept repayment of a loan from them. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, nifraim mehem, mipnei mishe meitzar hulo. You can accept repayment from them because that is painful to have to repay your debts and they won't be any issue. Amru lo, chachamim said to him, afa bishe meitzar hu achshav, even though there is an immediate pain to repaying it, nevertheless, sameach hu achar zman. But afterwards you realize now you've freed yourself of that burden. I've cleaned this issue up. I burnt the mortgage, whatever it is that you do in order to celebrate the payoff of the debt. And that does have a side of simcha to it. Now Rashi over here says the reason behind all of these is bekulu mishum da azil omodel obudat kochavim biyomedo. The reason for all of this is because these things cause the person to celebrate or be excited, and therefore he's going to go give thanks to his avodah zarah on the holiday. So Rashi, interesting enough, only brings one of the two reasons that the Gemara speaks about later on. Gemara and Dabov is actually going to bring two reasons for that which happens in our Mishnah. One of them is harvacha, which is profiting or benefit, and that causes them to go be modeh to the Avodah Zarah. The other alternative is that it's lifnei iver lo titein michshol. It's causing them to do something wrong with regards to Avodah Zarah, and then the Gemara there will speak about a nafkamina between those two reasons. But lifnei iver lo titein michshol might be that you're facilitating his ability to worship Avodah Zarah, but that would narrow the scope of what was problematic in this instance. We'll speak about that more in 1 second. Rashi then also notes that there's a difference between She'ila and Halva'a, which is important. In the English language, there's no distinction to borrow money or to borrow an object. And what Rashi points out is that in Hebrew, there is a distinction, and that is She'ila is borrowing an object that will remain intact, and you will return the object that you borrowed. On the other hand, when it comes to halva'a, that's something where it's lent to you with the expectation you will expend it, utilize it, and then return a replacement. So in instance, when they lend you money, don't expect the same money back, they expect the same value back. And that's called a halva'a. And that's what he notes, that the Mishnah uses the term halva'a and hashala, even though, again, in English, they both mean to borrow or to lend, but there is a distinction between things that remain intact versus things that are behotza'ah nitnah. Now, the Balei Tosafot are perplexed or bothered by something, and here already you start to see the tension that is raised, and we will find this throughout the Masechta, of the interactions between the Jews and their compatriots where they live, and how they're impacted by the dinim that are found in this Masechta. And many, many times, Rashi and the Balei Tosafot are trying to reconcile the practice of the day with the halachot that we see here. And this is one of those instances. It's interesting here, the Rabbi Tiva Eiger just notes that the Balei Tosafot here in Masechet Avodah Zarah, he quotes from Rabbi Yosef Azulai that the Tosafot here in Masechet Avodah Zarah are the Tosafot Rabbeinu Peretz. And some Masechetot, Tosafot Rabbeinu Peretz is a separate Tosafot. Over here, they think that these are the Tosafot Rabbeinu Peretz, and that has a slightly different style to it. Some say that it is the Tosafot Shantz. Whoever the Tosafot are here, they're slightly different, and also you can tell there's a style and sometimes a difficulty in the way that they write, but there is a difference in the Tosafot here than we find in some other Masechtot. But here, the Balei Tosafot asks, Asur Laseit Velateit Imahem, Perish HaKudris, he brings Rashi's explanation. He says, Mashmash Ratzon Lomar, Ach Mekach Umemkar. Rashi seems to indicate that we can't transact with them. Yeah, 3 days before their holiday, not allowed to transact with them at all, do business with them at all. Vikasha. Amas Samchu Ha'olam. What does the world rely on? Laseit V'latet V'yom Eid Ha'udat Kochamim Imahem. That they go ahead and they transact and they do business with them on their holidays. Forget about 3 days before. They're doing it on their holidays. Umikomakom. And beyond that, forget about their holidays. B'chol Shavua Yom Achad Yesh Lahem. Every week, they have Sunday, that is their holiday. How are we transacting with them? Ve'ein lomar the time of mishum. Don't say that the reason is dove kochavim shebechutz laretz lav avdei avodat kochavim elamin agmotem biyadam. Don't say that the avodat kochavim in chutz laretz, we will see this refrain here in the Gemara, that they are not really worshipping avodah zarah, but minhag avotehem biyadehem. That they have their minhag passed down from their parents. They don't really have any connection to it. They just do whatever their parents did. It's a tradition that passes to them. You can't say that over here, because even in that context, later on the Gemara says, Hayom Eidam Miu Asur. The day of their holiday is still Asur. So he says, V'lakach Nira, he comes up with this unbelievable thing, the Shari Mishum Eva. He says, because of Eva, we'll allow it. We have many halachot, for instance, the violation of Shabbat. The violation of Shabbat, to be Mechalel Shabbat, to save someone's life, is only true for a fellow Jew, for Israel. When it comes to a non-Jew, that's not the case. You're not allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat. But because of Eva, we allow that, and we permit you to violate the Shabbat because of the dangers that will come about. Tosafot now claims, it suggests here that transacting with them will be Mishum Eva, which is a Chiddush Gadol, and he himself notes that later on. He says, V'od, the time of Mishum Eva, Tinach lahal votam lahashilam. That makes sense when you're speaking about lending them things, giving them money, ulipuram, or to repay a debt. Shuve kuchavim tovei chobo. When it comes and insists on repayment. Aval laseit v'latayti mehem, haynu mecha komemkar, may eifa ika. What type of eva is there? I'm closed today. I don't have any business to do today. That's something where you have to actively engage. Or, if you don't go and borrow money on that day, how are they going to know it's because of their holiday that you're not borrowing the money, or you're not borrowing the object, or you're not paying them back on that day? They have no idea. How can you claim it's Mishum Eva? So the kach nira the tama heter Mishum de akum shebenenu timlan begavayu to lo pauchu lo bedat kochavim umehai taimo shori. Says that the non-Jews amongst us do not worship avodah zarah. And that is why it is mutar. Here you have a strong comment from the Baal HaTosafot Tosafot to our living in Christian Europe, that they believe that Christianity is not avodah zarah. It's clear that the Ashkenazi poskim definitely favored that view versus the Sephardi poskim who thought that Islam was not avodah zarah, but Christianity for sure. The Rambam writes that explicitly. And that here you have the Baal HaTosafot Tosafot trying to deal with the realities in their world and declaring that their neighbors are not Obdei Avodah Zarah, and that's why none of this has application in terms of the problems of transacting with them on their holidays or on every Sunday. If you look in the Me'iri later on in Avodah Zarah in the beginning of Perek Bet, and there's also a Me'iri in Bava Kamma on Daf Lamed Chedem and Aleph with regards to the halachot there in the Mishnayot that differentiate between a Jew and a non-Jew, and over there he makes a similar comment about the non-Jews amongst whom we live, that they are not classified as Obdei Avodah Zarah, but they are Menumasim, they're civilized, they have laws, they conduct themselves in a way that changes the halacha for them versus that which is written in Bava Kamma. And you see a similar sentiment about the fact that they're not Negdar Ke Obdei Avodah Zarah anymore. That's the way that the Baal HaTosafot deal with it. But then they also bring the possibility, which is something that the Rabbeinu Tam will say later on. Rabbeinu Tam has a bigger chiddush, and in that way solves the problem, which is Rabbeinu Tam ayem ifareish asur laseit v'latet imahem davka b'midei detakrovet. You're only not allowed to transact with them when it comes to items or issues that would facilitate their ability to do their services. So you can't sell them an animal if they're going to do sacrifices. You can't sell them wafers or wine, if that's part of their service. But there's no restriction against normal business with them. And then he says, V'laseit v'latet hochi perusho. That's very hard to explain in the Mishnah. Let's say for Latte, seems to be a bilateral commercial trading, not just one way. This would imply that there's only a problem in one direction, not the other direction. So he says, this is how you explain it. But Latte mehem hamaot, Latte lehem midei takrovet khalife hamaot. So Latte lehem means they're giving you money, and you're giving them things that would facilitate their worship. So the Latte is not simply transacting, it means money received from them for the purchase of items that they can use in their service. So the Rabbeinu Tam narrows the scope of this significantly and would really open up a large heter here, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, because there's only a problem when you're dealing with matters that are of a religious nature. It is a little hard to explain later on in the Gemara, because I mentioned to you before that the Gemara gives two reasons as to why it is that we are asur in this. One of them is harvacha, which is profiting or benefit from the transactions. The other one is, lifnei iver, lo titein michshol. And then the Gemara asks, v'kamar nafkamina. What's the nafkamina between them? Ditle behema v'didei. That he has a behema that he can use already for the tikrovet. So that sounds like it's only true according to the reasoning of lifnei iver, lo titein michshol. It's not true according to the one who says harvacha. And then, how could it be that the Rabbeinu Tam explains the Mishnah this way? It won't fit into one of the two views that we have later on. So he says, Elavadai midei delav tekrovet shari, delo shaychi azilu mode b'mekach u'memkar, kemi shenotei ma'ot tachar ha'chefetz v'ulokeach, v'gami batuach kolkach shiyaviach b'schora. So now the Rabbeinu Tam adds an additional chidush, which is, that the only time the guy is going to be excited and celebrate transacting with you is when he buys something particularly for his service. Because if he buys something for you, first of all, he's paying for it. So when you pay for something, what type of celebration is that? When you buy something, you're paying fair value for it. You have no idea whether you're going to be able to sell it for a better value later on. So there is no celebration just in purchasing. And in selling, in general, the Gemara's view is, and it probably was the culturally the view at the time, when you sold something, it was always a downer because you never give up possessions. Giving up possessions was a no-no, and only when you gave up possessions was when you were under duress to get cash. So he says, "Lupeish Rabbeinu Tam, and the Tzmala Min Hagolam Shavil Ma'ayu Machzikim Otoko Deavadak Kachavim Shareini Osim Shum Takrovet Eler Bamaot." He says, "Well, if that's the case, Rabbeinu Tam now solved their problem, because now even if you want to designate them as Obdei Avodah Zarah." His hefter makes it that it works, even if they're designated as Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Bala Tosfot at first tried the route that they're not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Now he says, according to Rabbeinu Tam, they can even be Ovdei Avodah Zarah, because the only problem is Takrovet. And guess what? Our neighbors over here, the only Takrovet they do is with money. They just hand money over. So there's no question about facilitating anything for them, because you're not facilitating giving them money. Even if you're trading with them, there's nothing sacrificial that they're doing in this. V'zeh lo shayach harvacha. And they got plenty of cash flowing around that they can do this. So there's no celebration that he all of a sudden liquidated something and got cash. They have cash that they can use without this, and therefore you're not creating the problem here, according to the Rabbeinu Tam. He says, "Umiu nachonu lachmir, kishabal vid kochavim amir, hilveni ma'ot l'shikri." If he comes in and says, "Lend me money for my shikri, my avodah zarah." Shikorin Ofrir. This practice of taking money and donating it to the Avodah Zarah, if he comes particularly and says, "Lend me the money in order to do this," then that's the time when you can say no, and that's probably the only problem you're going to have with the Rabbeinu Tam. Aval Rabbeinu Achanan Amar, Ki Gam Otam Ofrir Ein Shum Yisur. Even in that issue, there's no Yisur. Ki Ma Sheim Notnim Otam LeGalachim UleKomrim Enu Amash LeShem Odak Kochavim LeTzorach Hanatam. When they give it to the priests and to the monks to use, they're not doing that in order to worship the Avodah Zarah. They're basically giving a tithe to the church so these people can live and provide the services that they need, but it's not going directly to the Avodah Zarah. So he's willing even to be matir, borrowing the money for his payments of tithes or whatever it is that they're giving towards the Avodah Zarah. You can see in this a tremendous kula that is developed here in the Balei Tosafot, trying to deal with their neighbors, who they are transacting with all the time, not only all the time, every Sunday, and on their holidays, forget about 3 days before, even on their holidays, and they're trying to deal with what is the heter. They know that's the practice. This is a typical Ashkenazi shoot that you would have, which is, the minhag ha'am is this way, how do we justify the minhag ha'am? In the post-case Sfarad, they would say the people are wrong. This is the halacha. But the Poskei Ashkenaz, when they see the Minhag HaAm, Balei Tosafot would do it all over Shas. Well, this is the way that people conduct themselves. They must be right. And now, how do we justify that? And that's what you're seeing here. They're all transacting. How do we get there? So he gave three possibilities. He gave the one possibility is that they're not Negdar, Kovdei Avodah Zarah. The possibility of their Beinu Tam. There's only a restriction when you are facilitating items for their Avodah Zarah. And the third one, which is really a play off of the Rabbeinu Tam, which is that none of what they're doing is going towards Avodah Zarah. The monies are fungible and they have other monies. And even when they give in to pay for their tithes or whatever it is, it's not going directly to the Avodah Zarah. It's just providing services for their holy people. So in that way, he wants to justify this practice of engaging with the non-Jews. All right, so then another note here, which is very interesting, that Balei Tosafot bring from their Rabbeinu Tam, that he says, lending them, if you lend them without charging interest, that is problematic. If you're charging interest, that is fine. Because that's a difficulty. Now time's ticking on him and he's going to have to pay interest on it. And he's going to have to pay back more than he borrowed. And that is not considered to be something that you would give hoda'a for him because he now has a burden that is laying on him, which is the interest that builds up over time. That is the Rabbeinu Tam's view. Should know that there are many who disagree with this Rabbeinu Tam and say that getting the loan is the biggest issue. And even when you borrow money with interest, the fact that somebody lent you money in of itself is a problem. And therefore, the hoda'ah that would result from that would be equally problematic. And they think that even if you lend with interest, it is problematic. Over here, the Tosafot is giving you a little bit of preview about what's going to come up in the Gemara, which is accepting repayment from them. Gemara is going to say later on, you can accept repayment, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, because kimatzil miyadam, you're saving your money. You never know if they're really going to pay back the loan. And if they come back to pay back their loan, even on their holidays or before their holidays, you take the money because there's a chance you'll never see that money again. So now Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha differentiates between a loan that is extended orally versus a loan where you have a shtar. He says, a loan that's extended orally, you should take the money back because it's kimatzil miyadam. It's like saving yourself because otherwise you have no clue you're ever going to see it again. Whereas if you have a shtar, then you have the evidence to document the loan and you'll be able to collect in the future. And then, again, the Balei Tosafot says, l'kach nira d'ri, doto milvesh b'shtarenu. Oh, afilu otam sheyesh lanu mehem chutmot. Even when we lend money today and with a shtar. Or even when they have it stamped and sealed by the authorities, shemutar li para mehem, it's mutar to accept repayment for them. But if he azil amode, and if he goes and thanks his avodah zarah for it, shel olam hu ke chashib ke meitzil miyadam. Because anytime you get money back, that's considered to be matzil miyadam. So first of all, you see their situation or predicament, which is that whatever they got paid back, they were lucky or felt happy to get paid back, especially since it was one of the businesses that the Jews were engaged in was money lending. And so every time they got money back, they felt it was kimatzil miyadam, and they did not feel that the courts would support them in these situations. And therefore he says, no matter how much evidence you have that the guy owes you the money, you take repayment of the loan because it's too risky not to take repayment of the loan. And he says, hey chadika mashkom, even if you have collateral, omer v'yushami de'ein milveh obdon memashkom. Shami says that there's no loss of a loan when you have collateral. He's talking, it seems, from experience that even with collateral, it seems to be that we're losing money on these loans. And therefore, you take repayment no matter what. And what the Balei Tosafot basically differentiate or say over here is that that's when Yad Yisrael Takifa, when the Jews have the upper hand and run the court systems, then you could speak about a difference between an oral loan and a documented loan. But we're under their court system and living in their world, we have no rights. And we have no ability to enforce the repayment of loans. And if that's the case, whatever we get repaid, you take it no matter what. So he's now again opening up the issues that they're facing in their time, which is that if they don't take money, they're not going to get it again. And therefore, any repayment that's made, no matter when it's done, you accept repayment because we see it as, based on Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, kimatzil miyadam, as if you're saving it from their hands. Right now, the Gemara begins. Rabbi Shmuel, chatani edehen, v'chatani edehen. One of them had an edehen with an aleph, and one of them had edehen with an ayin in it. So again, here, first of all, that might indicate that They didn't necessarily have the Mishnayot written down in front of them. They might have had it Be'al Peh. So that's why the confusion comes up, because you don't know if it's Edehem with an Ayin or with an Aleph. Although we see these types of Machlokot throughout Shas about the Mishnah, and that partly might have to do with the fact that the Mishnayot are written in Hebrew, and here you're dealing with Amoraim in Babel, who are trying to understand what the meaning of the word is, or what word is being used by the Mishnah. And that sometimes brings up the confusion. You can see that in the beginning of Bamei Madlikin, in the Gemara in Shabbat, where the Gemara is taking every word in the Mishnah, which are types of fuels, types of wicks, and translating them. And some of them are translating from the Hebrew into Aramaic. Some of them are translating from Hebrew to an Aramaic that sounds exactly like the Hebrew. The point is that they are trying to translate the Mishnah because the Mishnah is in Hebrew and they're trying to make it relevant to the language that they're in. So over here too, they hear the word Edehen, they're trying to make heads or tails of what it means, Edehen. What's clear is that the Mishnah does not use the word Moed or Moadim, which is the word that is used for the Jewish holidays. And the Rambam says it's inappropriate to use the word Moed for their holidays, because the Moed indicates an appointed time, something that is of significance and recognized. So therefore, Moed would be the inappropriate word, and they have to use something else. The question is, what is that Edehem, or that other word that they're using? Is it Edehem with an Aleph, or Edehem with an Ayin? Mantane Edehem lo mishtabesh, mantane Edehem lo mishtabesh. The one who uses it with an Aleph is not wrong, the one who uses it with an Ayin is not wrong. Mantane Edehem lo mishtabesh, the one who says an Aleph is not wrong, dichtiv. Ki karov yom edam, which is from Ha'azino, that their day of catastrophe is rapidly approaching. So you see the word edam there is used both as an appointed time as well as something that is negative. We have a similar usage of the word moed in Megillat Echa, which is moed lishbor bachurai, that it was an appointed time to destroy us. From here, interestingly enough, Chazal learned that Rosh Chodesh is nikre moed, from the usage of that word moed in Megillat Echa. But it's a similar usage to the word the Edam over here, which is moed lishbor bachurai, where you take a positive term and then you turn it negative. Over here, Yom Edam is their day of catastrophe, but it's a day that is appointed for them to be destroyed. Umad detani Edehem lo mishtabesh, the one who uses Edehem is also not wrong, because the Pasuk in Ishayahu says, and this is actually a Haftorah for Parshat Breshit, all the nations have come together, and all peoples have gathered together. That part of the pasuk will become important in a second. That's why I'm reading the whole pasuk. Who amongst them will declare this? And the foretold these things that would have happened. Yitnu edehem. Let them produce their witnesses. And then they will be vindicated. And then they'll hear what is being said and say it is true. And say that it is true. So there they're using the word edehem also. They're referring to the non-Jews. That is not clear. That's what the Gemara is going to debate in a second as to whom it is speaking about in the Pasuk, that Yaviu Yitnu Edehem, that they will give witness to V'yitzdaku, and they will be justified. If you read it as referring to the non-Jews, it is read in almost in a sarcastic, cynical way, which is Yitnu Edehem V'yitzdaku? Are they going to give testimony and be justified? They have nothing to testify on their behalf for, so they won't be justified. It is belashon tmiah, as Rashi says over here. That would be the uses of the word then. Madatani edehem, maitai malotani edehem. The one who uses it with the aleph, why doesn't he use the ayin? Amalacha tavra odif. He says that the other edam with an aleph is better because it speaks about their destruction. So if you're going to use a word to represent their holiday, you want to use a negative word because it associates with their holidays, and that's why we feel that it's a better term or a better terminology to use. Mandatani Edehem, the one who uses the ayin word, which is aid, to give testimony, Maitamalotani Edehem, why doesn't he use the aleph word? Amalacha, man kogorim lahu tabra, what is what causes their destruction? Edut shehedidu be'atzmam, it is the testimony that they give about themselves. So he says that the edam of the aleph is a result of the Eidam with the Ayin. And he says the facilitator of their destruction is the fact that they have nothing to say when they come to testify. They have nothing to justify their position. Again, this is all going to come up in the Gemara in a second. Hilkach Edut Adifa. Therefore, the word Edut is better to use. Now Gemara asks the question, Vaha yitnu edem yitzdaku ba'obde kuchavim tiv? That was written about non-Jews. Habi Yisrael tiv. That sounds like it's written about the Jews, which is all the nations will gather together and speak to the fact that why are the Jews being treated differently? Why are they given this benefit? And what will happen is, yitnu edem, the Jews will give their testimony, v'yitzdaku, and they will be justified or vindicated. V'yishma'u, and the non-Jews will hear that, v'yomru emet, and say, you are right. And what you're doing for the Jews is correct. So it makes it sound like that edehem over there, or the edut that we're speaking about, is not for the non-Jews, but rather about the Jews themselves. Ha'bisrofti, damar Yishu ben Levi, kol mitzvot shisrael osim bo'olam hazeh, all mitzvot that Jews engage in this world, ba'ot umeidot lahem le'olam haba. They come and testify for them in olam haba. Shenemar, itnu edehem v'itzdaku. Eilu Yisrael, that refers to the Jews. On the other hand, Yishma'u, v'yomru, emet, they will hear this and then declare it is true, eilu obdei kochavim, that they'll stamp of approval that the Jews are deserving of what they are getting. So you see there that the word aid then is not referencing to the non-Jews, but rather to the Jews themselves. The Marsha points out over here that this goes along with the Mesorah that we have, that every time a Jew does something good or a mitzvah, that he produces a praklit. He produces someone who will be a representative of his to take care of him. And it's as if there is a public announcement that he's done a mitzvah. It creates a malach melitz, as we say. And that becomes the testimony, quote unquote, or that spiritual creation is what becomes the testimony on behalf of this individual. And he says that's a similar concept to what's being said over here, that you produce edut. You produce some sort of testimony that will declare that you have done that mitzvah. Elo amar avuna b'rei Rav Yeshua, manda amar edehen, the one who says edehen here, mehocha, he learns it out of the pasuk in the next parak in Yishayahu, which is the Torah for Parshat Vayikra, yotzrei pesel kulam tohu. They fashion all of these statues, all of them are for naught or worthless, v'chamudehem bal yo'ilu, the things that they adore, their adoration, is to no avail. As they themselves can testify that bayiru bayidu the man yevoshu, that they can neither look nor think, and they will be ashamed by what they are worshiping. So you see over here the word edehem is a reference to their testimony, but their testimony to the worthlessness of the avodah zarah that they are engaged in. Dorosh Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, v'itamer Rabbi Samlai latidavo. That he's going to bring a Sefer Torah and put it in his bosom, which according to the Maharal signifies the tremendous love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Torah, or according to the Marsha indicates that it is something that is not bigaloi, that there are many parts that are nistar, and that's why it's Becheko Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'omer, L'misha Sakpa Yavovi Tos Koro. Whoever engaged in the Torah, come and collect your reward. All of a sudden, all the goyim come, all mixed up. Shinamar. So this is the pasuk that we quoted before from Yishayahu Men Gimel. This is the beginning of the pasuk. Kol goyim nikbitzu yachtav. All the nations are going to gather together. Amalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu, al tichnasu lefanai barbuvia. Don't come in a whole mess in front of me. Everybody pushing and trying to get in there. Ela tikanes kol uma umbuma vitzofreha. Every nation and its leaders should come in. Shenemar. That's the next line in the pasuk, which is v'yasfu le'umim, that the nations will gather together. V'ein le'om ela malchut. When it comes to the om, that is a designation of malchut, whether it means a kingdom, a king, but it is a defined group of individuals. Shenemar, because it says in the nevuah that Rivka gets about Yaakov and Esav. And one nation will exceed over the other nation. And again, the om generally means a large number of people, or a group of people. What they're pointing out over here is that the term used here, la'om, is not just a random group of people, but rather it means a group of people that is associated with a particular kingdom. And that's what it means, v'yasvulu umim. It's not just the goyim are getting together and everybody's coming in, the umim, they're coming. Each nation or each machud by itself is going to come in. And that's what they prove from the pasuk by Rivka, which there can't be speaking about a group of people or a random group of people. It must be speaking about a particular kingdom. It's speaking about Yaakov versus Esav. Umi ikar buvya kamei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You go to the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, there is no confusion for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of everybody. He judges everybody. And the skira, the kol achat v'achat, he takes care of every person individually. And there's no confusion for him. That reason has nothing to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It has to do with the people who are coming to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they don't get mixed up with each other. So that they can hear what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say to them. So it's not about Hashem can't discern. The problem is that if they all come together, their claims and the response is not going to be clear because they're not going to be with the right people or the right group that they need to be with. Miad nichnasale fanav machut romi tchila. Then the great empire of Rome enters first. My taima, what's the reason? Mishum dechashiva, because it's so significant. Uminolan dechashiva, how do you know that it's so significant? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says in Daniel, v'techo kol ara, they will devour the entire land. U'tidishuina v'tadikina, and they will trample and crush or crumble the land beneath them, meaning that they are on the move and they're going to take over. And Amar Rabbi Yochanan, zo Romi Chayevet. This refers to Romi Chayevet. If you look at the Balei Tosfot, it says, what's Romi Chayevet? Mishub dechtibu in Malachi, v'karu lahem gvul Rish'a. That they will have the boundaries of the border of evilness. Rasha, targum Chayeva. The translation into Aramaic of the word Rasha is Chayevet. Nivsa b'maseh Merkava, ki maseh de Rabbi Chanina ben Tradya, nigzal Romi churban gadol. And so he says, based on that, it seems to be that it's referencing to Rome, and then when you say Romi Chayevet, it means Romi HaRish'a, the terrible or the evil Roman Empire. She'tiv'a yatza b'chol olam. The way Rashi says it over here, that she'tiv'a yatza b'chol olam is Shim'a. Its name or its recognition has expanded to the whole world. Remember back in the Gemara previously used it, there Rashi translated the word tiv'a to mean matbeya, that their coinage has gone out to the whole world. And there, in the Masechet, they were arguing about which coinage was better, the Persian coinage or the Roman coinage. They said, well, this guy must have been sleeping because it's so clear that the Roman currency is carried in a broader context or in a broader swath of the world. And that's what it means, shetiva yatza b'chol olam, that its currency is accepted everywhere, and therefore they are more ascendant. Minalan demanda choshiv ayo bereisha. How do you know just because you're important means you go in first? Now, the question seems silly because, of course, you give deference to someone who is more important, but the question stems from here is because it's not for something good. When it comes to doing something good, you can understand there's kavod to give the person first who is the leader. But here, where it's not going to be so much fun, maybe over here, there's no deference given to the one who's more chashuv. Kidur Rav Chista, Dam Rav Chista, Melech Bitzibur. Are you dealing with the king and the subjects? Melech Nichnas Tchila Adin. The king goes in first to be judged. Shenemar lasot mishpat abdo umishpat amo Yisrael. From Malachim Aleph, Perek Chet, which is actually the Av Torah for Shmini Atzeret, obviously not in Eretz Yisrael, in Chutz Laretz, which is lasot mishpat abdo umishpat amo Yisrael. The judgment of his servant is Shlomo Melech who's speaking there, umishpat amo Yisrael, and then the judgment of the Am, his subjects afterwards. The time am I. Why does the king go first? Ibaitem alab orach ara, the Meitav Malko Me'evrai. It's inappropriate or not proper etiquette to leave the king waiting in the waiting room, so you take him in first. Ibaitem mikami delifush karonaf. Or maybe it's better to get the king in there before God gets really angry. So the king, who's an individual, may as well get him in first because the tzibur has more protection in the fact that they are the tzibur. So before he gets angry about everything that's happening, get the king through, and that's why we put him in first. For that reason, someone who is chashuv goes first, even when it comes to din. Even when it comes to these issues, we still let the more important person enter first. So I'm going to let my Kodesh Baruch Hu, b'maya saktem. What did you engage in? So the Baal Tosfot will point out, b'maya saktem means, what in every generation were you engaged in that is of a worthwhile purpose? And number two is, how does that relate to the Torah? Those are the two things that God's asking for. Now, Maya Saktim Omrim Lefanav Ribono Shalom Harbei Shvakim Takninu. We put together great marketplaces. Harbe merchatzot asinu. We put together great bathhouses. Harbe kesem zav here binu, and we brought great wealth to these areas. Kulam lo asinu el bishvil Yisrael kedei sheitatzku b'Torah. And we only did this to facilitate the ability of the Jews to learn Torah, meaning that they should have business and transactions and commercial things near them. So we have all of these marketplaces that we open up. They should enjoy the bathhouses so they can go and learn Torah, and that there'll be plenty of wealth around so that they can spend their time engaged in learning. That's their claim, which is that they facilitated Limud HaTorah. Amar lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shotim shebaolam, you fools, kol ma she'asitem letzorach atzmechem asitem. When you did this, you did it for your own purposes. Tekantem shvakim, you put together marketplaces, loshibahen zonot, in order that you could facilitate the ability to have trade in harlots. Now the truth is, he could have just said trade, because it's for your own benefit, you're making money from it, but Hashem did it in a way that was also disparaging, which is not only you did it for your own benefit, but you did it in a way that is also not so nice, which is you're trading in women in these marketplaces. Merchatzot, for instance, you put up bathhouses, la'dein b'hem atzmechem, it's so that you can enjoy yourselves, and yet you can take all the pleasures of this world. Kesev v'zav shalihu. Gold and silver, wealth, belongs to me, God says. Shenemar, liya chesef v'liya zav, nu'm Hashem tzvakot. All the silver and gold, all the money is mine. That is what Hashem says. And again, that's what we say in Masechet Avot. Also, that everything belongs to God. The same idea here. Liya chesef v'liya zav. What's interesting here is that the response of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actually very similar to what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says in Bamei Madlikin in Shabbat. Over there, there's a discussion about whether the Roman Empire is beneficial or not beneficial. And then Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai says that they do all these great things in terms of their public works and all these things that they provide in terms of facilities for us. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai basically says, yes, they do that, but they do it all for their own benefit. And that's what gets Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai into trouble with the Roman authorities. But over here, you actually see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's answer is very similar to what Reb Shimon Bar Yochai said in the Gemara in Bamei Madlikin in Shabbat. Kum yesh b'chad magid zot. Do you have anybody amongst you who is magid zot? And again, when I read you the pasuk before from Yeshayahu, mi b'hem yagid zot is part of the pasuk that we quoted before. And it says, mi b'hem yagid zot, vein zot el Torah. And zot is Torah shnemar, v'zot ha-Torah asher sam Moshe. So he said, where's the Torah? Show me what you guys have. What card do you have to play over here? And they have nothing to say. Miyad yatsu b'pachei nefesh. They go out all distraught, depressed, because they have no claim over here. They have no way to get the reward because they don't deserve it. Yatsat malchut Romi, v'nichnas malchut paras. Once Rome leaves, then the Persians enter acharem. My taima. What is the reason for that? Da chashiva batra. Because they are considered the next most important behind the Romans. Uminalan, how do we know that's the case? Tichtib, because it says in the vision that Daniel has, Baru Cheva, and I saw the animals, it's spelled there with the hay, Acharei Tinyana, Damyol the Dove. And after that second one, it looked like a dove, a bear. Betani Rav Yosef, Elu Parsim, Shochlim Vishotim Kedov. Those are the Persians that eat and drink like a bear. Umisurvalim Basar Kedov. And they are fat and overweight like the bears. Umigadlin Seyar Kedov. And they grow out their hair or hairy like the bears. Beinlahem Menucha Kedov. And they're never at rest like the bear. And even though, truthfully, the Malchut of Babel sits between the Malchut of Rome and the Malchut of Paras in that vision of Daniel, nevertheless, it shows, first of all, that Paras is considered Chashuv. Later on, the Gemara will explain why maybe more Chashuv than Babel. But over here, the Baal HaTosfot explain why maybe the Dove exceeds the Ari, which Babel is compared to. Vim Tomar, Adrabah, Machut Babel Adifa, Shenim Shalad Ari. Why isn't Babel considered to be more significant? Because Babel is compared to a lion, whereas the Persians are compared to a bear. He says, Yesh Lamar, Dafagab Dari Melech, even though the lion is the king of the forest, Mikomakom dovhu az yoter. A bear is stronger, ubaltach pulot. And he has a sneakier way about him, and he's able to do more, and therefore they give precedence to the bear. And then he brings an alternative answer, Rabbi Yitzchak Mefarish, the Babel was only compared to an Ari when it was ascendant. when it was ruling over the whole world, then it was compared to a lion. But once they were overtaken by the Persians, they're no longer compared to a lion. And that's why the Persians are next, is because they are considered like the bear, and they're the next in the vision of Daniel. Amalei Makodesh Baruch Hu. B'may asaktem? What did you engage in? Same question. Amrim lefanav ribono shalom. Harbei gisharim gasharno. We put up lots of bridges. Harbei krachim kavashno. We conquered many cities. Harbei milchamot asino. We went to war many times. We fought many battles. Ve'kulam lo asino shbishvel Yisrael kedei shitasku b'torah. We only did that to help out the Jews. We did it to facilitate their ability to travel. We did it so that we could free them from the burdens of other authorities. And we conquered and went to war and to help them out. Everything that you did for your own benefit. You put up bridges so you could put tolls on the bridges and collect the tolls. And you conquered cities and put together cities in order to take taxes for the king. The taxes come in one of two ways. And Gaiar is either that you have to supply their military with supplies. That means animals, food, and everything like that. Or in Gaiar means that you have to go in to work for the king. That you have a rotation of a taxation where you have to go and then do the king's work at that time. Milchamot ani asiti. War? That you waged war? That's from me. Shnamar Hashem ish milchama. God is the one who conducts or directs all wars. Do you have anybody who knows or spoke in Torah? It's with the hey. Yagid zot. Again, from that pasuk in Yeshayahu before that we quoted with regards to Itnu Edehem Yitzdako. That is mi bahem yagid zot. Is right before that in the pasuk. And again, vein zot ela Torah. Shnemar zot the Torah. Shesham oseh. Yad yatsum lefanav bepachei nefesh. Right after that, they left all distraught about this. After the Persians witnessed what happened to the Romans, didn't they learn their lesson? The Romans said all these great things that they did, and God dismissed it and said, you did it for your own benefit. The Persians come in with the exact same claim, and they get dismissed. What were they expecting? They didn't do very much different than what the Romans had done, so why did they expect a different outcome? My time, Ailo, so then why did they go in? Amre inu satre Beit HaMikdash, vanan baninan. They destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, and we built the Beit HaMikdash. So now, that's a significant difference, which is the Romans destroy the second Beit HaMikdash, whereas the Persians are the one who permitted and helped to build the second Beit HaMikdash. So Tosfot says, why don't they raise that with Hashem? That should have been one of their squeals that they could have brought up, is that we built the Beit HaMikdash. So the answer to the Baal Tosfot is that's what I told you before, that it means kol dor vador. We want to know what you did over the many generations. That's one generation you helped out with the Beit HaMikdash. That's not something that had a long-term impact where every generation of Persians is involved in Binyan Beit HaMikdash. We want to know what you did as a nation over the centuries to benefit Torah and to uphold the Torah. And that they had no answer to, because the Binyan Beit Sheni both is limited in its scope of time, as well as the fact that it was only that generation that facilitated it that gets credit for it. And every nation goes in with similar claims and gets rejected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After they saw that it didn't help, the ones that before went in didn't help, they were not successful. My time, why did they go in and plead before HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Sabre, Hanach ishtabdu behu b'Yisrael. These nations subjugated Israel. And we did not subjugate Israel. So they thought they had an advantage. So that they think, okay, these ones subjugated Israel, these ones didn't. So maybe we have an advantage to go make a claim before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maishno hani b'chashive. What is different about these that they're considered significant? Maishno hani d'lo chashive lo. And why are these not considered to be significant enough? So now, this is your question, Fred. And Baal Tosafot say, the question here is about the four images that were seen in the vision of Daniel, which reference to Rome, Persia, Babylon, Babel, and Yavan in Greece. And the Gemara's question is here, okay, why did you only consider Rome and Persia, and they go in as Chashivim? It's not asking why did these go in and not the other 70 nations? Why are they not considered to be significant? No, the question is more narrow in scope. Daniel has four images in his vision. How come only two of them are considered to be significant and the other two are not considered to be significant? These nations will continue and be ascendant until the time of Mashiach, which is that Yavan and Babel disappear. They are, basically Persia swallows up Babel, and Greece is swallowed up by Rome, and therefore their kingdoms or their empires were limited in scope and time, and that's why they're not considered to be significant. But the Persian Empire and the Roman Empire are long-term empires that will be around until the Zman HaMashiach, which basically indicates, I think what we're seeing over here, is a reference to the two largest religions, or Western civilization and Islam, which is that the Persian Empire represents the Muslim world or Islam, and that Rome represents the Christianity and the Western world. And that's what it means here, that Rome and Persia are going to be around until the Zman HaMashiach. And that also means that what Tosfot over here says, Mashko Makutayu Ad HaMashiach, that their kingdoms will extend until the Zman HaMashiach. Adam Rinan, what about what we say in the Gemara in Sanhedrin? Atida Paras, Shitipol Biad Romi. Persia is going to fall to the hands of the Romans in the Atid. Hainu, Samuch, Libiata Mashiach. That is right before Mashiach comes. So he said, that's not something that happened, that Rome is going to overtake Persia. That's going to be something that is there to the end of time. And right before Mashiach comes, that's when the Romans are going to overcome the Persians. Or in our world, it would be that Western civilization will overcome the threat of Islam, possibly. Omrim lefanav, Rono Shalom, klum natata lanu, velo kiblanua. Right now, try a different tact and say, listen, you want the Torah, but you didn't give us the Torah. Had you given us the Torah, then it would have been fine. But you didn't offer us the Torah that we didn't accept it. Why says, we have not seen the Meimar Ochi. How can they say that? Vaktiv, doesn't the Pasuk say in Zot HaBracha, Vayomer Hashem miSinai ba v'zarach miSeir lamo, that Hashem came into Sinai and he had risen from Seir, that he had been in Seir before he got to Sinai. Uchdev, and it says in Chavakuk, which now you can know refers to or has a connection to Matan Torah, because this is the Haftorah in Chutz Laaretz for the second day of Shavuot, this parak in Chavakuk, which is Eluka miTeiman yavo. Hashem came from Teiman, the Kadosh, Mihar Paran Selah. And that which is sanctified comes from Har Paran Selah. You need to know the latter half of the puzzle because it says, my bayi be Seir, or my bayi be Paran. Why is Hashem in Seir and why is Hashem in Paran? I'm Rabbi Okalan Melanei, Shechetzira Kodesh Baruch Hu Koluma Vilashon. Hashem went around to every nation and language, Velo Kibloa, offered them the Torah and they did not accept it. Ad Shabai Tzil Yisrael Vikibloa. So they came to the Jews, and they accepted it. So how can they say you didn't give us the opportunity to accept it when Hashem went around to all the nations and offered it to them? Now, Seir clearly refers to Edom, because we know that Seir is Edom. The question is, what is the reference to Teiman and Paran? So Rashi and the Balei Tosfot know that Paran is Eretz Yishmael, Dave, the Hagar, that she went to Midbar Paran. So Yishmael or Hagar live in Midbar Paran, so Paran is clearly a reference to them. The question is, what is the reference of Teiman? And he said, there were other Gemaras that had an additional statement, not Ma Bayib Seir, Ma Bayib Paran, they added in one more, Ma Bayib Teiman. What is he doing in Teiman? Tosafot and Rashi eliminate that from the Girsa, and the Tosafot says, Lo Garsin in Ma Bayib Teiman, did Teiman mi Seir hu? Because Teiman is part of Seir, and therefore it's not a question. Teiman and Seir are synonymous, and that's why the Gemara doesn't ask the question. Miu, kasha the Girsat Rashi, amai maiti kra the Chavakuk. According to the Girsat Rashi, why did they bring the pasuk from Chavakuk? The Midrash Hachi be kra to eat the Zot HaBracha. Because then they have the pasuk in Zot HaBracha, habiuskar paran. Because the word paran is also mentioned there. Vayom Hashem Sinai Bav, Zerachim Seir Lamo, Hofia Mehar Paran. Paran is found in Zot HaBracha. So why did they bring the pasuk in Chavakuk? When you could have gotten the whole thing out of the pasuk in Zot HaBracha, where he went to Seir and Paran. So according to the Girsa Rashi, where he wipes out Mad Boyi B'Teiman, makes it sound like you could have gotten all the information you needed from the pasuk in Zot HaBracha, which is Edom and Ishmael. And that's what we're saying from Chavakuk anyway. So for that reason, the Balei Tosafot suggests maybe Teiman is not subset of Seir. Rather, Teiman, like we see in the Torah many times, is a direction. Teimana is to the south. And the truth is, the reason Teiman is to the south is because the root of the word is Yamin, to be right, to the right. And in their days, unlike our maps today, which all face north upwards, their maps faced east upwards. So if east is the upward side of your map, when you turn to the right, that is south. And so therefore, Teiman means to the south. And therefore, the Baal Tosafot suggests that the Teiman here is not a subset of Seir, but rather all the directions that Hashem came to Har Sinai from. And that's what he says, Rabbi Yochanan, Aomer, the Gorish Shapir, my Baal Tosafot, my Baal Teiman. And therefore, they put in the Girsa back in, saying that it should be my Baal Tosafot, my Baal Teiman. By Teiman, Lav Shem Umahu, El Shem Ruach Darom. And the Teiman here is not about the city of Teiman, or the area of Teiman in Seir, rather the direction, southern direction of Teiman. And in that way, you could have to bring the Pasuk in Habakkuk, because Teiman is mentioned in Habakkuk, which is not mentioned in the Pasuk in Zota Bracha. And for that reason, they brought it, and that's why the Baal Tosafot in some ways favor the original Girsa that Rashi eliminated, Mabayi B'Teiman, because otherwise you could have gotten all the information from the Pasuk in Devarim, and not go to Habakkuk. The only thing you gain from Habakkuk is Teiman. That's why it makes more sense to say that that question is there as well. So, that can't be the claim of the nations. Elahachi Amre. This is what they say. Kirum kibluna veloka nuha. Did we accept it and not keep it? Well, da tabraton. That's a backwards claim. Did we ever accept it that we didn't keep it? We didn't accept it and therefore we didn't keep it. That's not a good claim. That's going to be their downfall. If they didn't accept it, then they're already incriminated. Because you can say, Amaylo kablal tua. Why didn't you accept it? Elkach omrim lifanav. This is what they say before God. Ribono shalom, klum kafit alenu har kigigit. Did you put a mountain over our heads, like a, whether it's a barrel or a basket, to force us to accept the Torah, v'lokim lenua, and then we didn't accept it? Kamosha asa Yisrael, like you did to the Jews, dichtiv, the pasuk says, v'yit yatzvu b'tachti tahar, they stood at the base of the mountain. So, amar dimi barchama malameh shekapa kodesh baruch hu har kigigit al Yisrael. The God put the mountain over the Jews, like a barrel or like a basket. You accept the Torah, everything's fine. This will be your burial place. So now they have a good claim. The Jews accepted it under duress. If you had put us under that duress, we would have accepted it as well. And the Gemara in Shabbat that speaks about this also says about this pasuk, Mikan moda rabada oraita. This is a significant claim against the Torah, or meaning that the necessity to keep the Torah, if we were compelled to keep it, then why is it that we are bound by something when we are forced to keep it? The Gemara there speaks about kiblu v'kimu, then in Zman Mordechai ben Esther, they accepted it willingly over there. There are other explanations there in the Gemara and Shabbat, what it means, kafaleim harki gigit, the fact that they said naseh v'nishma first, accepted it willingly. Then only when maybe they thought about backing out, Hashem compelled them to continue. Or maybe Naseh v'nishma refers to Torah shebichtav, and that Kavaleim Harkigid is about Torah shebealpeh. And again, there are other ways to deal with this issue. But over here, Miyad Omer Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Arishonot Yashmiunu. The original mitzvot, or the mitzvot of the Mekor, they will speak to you. Shneamar. So again, in Yishayahu Mem Gimel, it says, Arishonot Yashmienu. And then the earlier ones will tell us. The earlier ones are a reference to Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. So it says there, Sheva Mitzvot Shekibaltem Heichen Kiyamtem. How about the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach? Did you keep those? Uminalan Delo Kaimum. So how do we know that they didn't keep the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach? The Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef brings the pasuk from Habakkuk Gimel that we saw before. Amad V'yomadeid Eretz. He stood up and measured the land. Ra'a v'yater goyim. And he saw and he dispersed, or the word v'yater, they're going to learn here, not to be dispersed the nations, but that he was matir. He released them. My ra'a, what did Hashem see? Ra'a, zayim mitzvot shekiblu alehem, b'nei Noach. He saw the sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach that they accepted, the lo kaimum, that they did not keep them. Kevin shelo kaimum, amad v'yitiran lehem. When he saw that they weren't keeping the sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, he was matir them. He released them from the obligation. Mar says, Itgura, Itgar? How could it be that he would reward them for not keeping the mitzvot? Im gematzinu chotei niskar. That's the case. We see a sinner who's benefiting. Amar marbarei deravina lomar she'af al pi shemikaymim otam ein mikablim elayim sechar. That even though they keep them, they no longer regain any reward from keeping them. Below, do they not get any reward for keeping the mitzvot? Vatanya, don't we have a bright day? Rabbi Meir Omer, minayin shafilu oveid kochavim vosek Torah shu kogein gadol. Someone who's engaged in Torah, even if he's a non-Jew, he gets the status of a kohen gadol. Tamalomar, asher yaseh odam adam v'chay b'hem. Pasuk says that any adam that engages in them will live by them. Kohanim, levim, v'israelim, lo ne'mar. It doesn't say kohanim, levim, v'israelim. Ela ha-adam halamanta shafilu ovei kochavim v'osek b'torah. It uses the generic term adam. That you see that even a non-Jew engages in Torah, hariu kohen gadol. He has the status of a kohen gadol. Ela lomar locha, to teach you, she'en mekablim elem schar kemitzuveh v'oseh. They don't get reward as if someone who's commanding it does. Ela kemisha einem mitzuveh v'oseh. Rather like someone who is not commanded and does it on a voluntary basis. Dama Rabbi Chanina, gadol mitzuveh v'oseh, yoter mishenu mitzuveh v'oseh. That greater is the one who's commanded to do something and does it, rather than the one who is not commanded and does it voluntarily. Which Rashi knows over here, lomar, she'im mikayimim, to teach you that if they do keep the mitzvot, hatarazu lo l'tovatami, the fact that God released them from the Sheva Mitzvot Nehoch is not good for them. Because now they're not commanded to do them. And therefore, if they keep them, they're not going to get any reward. If you look on Rashi, Daf Vavam and Aleph, in Divrei Maskil, Lifnei Iver, Rashi over there says something interesting. Over here, the Gemara is speaking about the problem of Lifnei Iver for a Jew towards a non-Jew. Why is there any Lifnei Iver if they don't have any command about the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach anymore? So even though we said, Nehid Amran Hamad Ve'etiram, even though God released them from their obligation, Mi'u Al Yavru Al Yadecha, still they shouldn't violate it because of you. Sharei Atidim Hein Litin Et Adin, Hashem Mikamim Utan. Because in the future, they're going to pay the price that they don't keep the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, even though, Afopi, Shein Lahem Schar B'Kiyumam, even though they get no reward for keeping them anymore, because Hashem was matir them, not matir them, saying that you don't have to keep them anymore, just you have to keep them, but you're not going to get any reward because you're not a mitzvah v'oseh. But nevertheless, if they don't keep them, they're going to be brought to task for that. And for that reason, a Jew is commanded on Lifnei Iver not to cause them to violate it. So Rashi notes over here, when the Gemara says that ain't a mitzvah, and therefore they won't get any reward, that doesn't mean that they won't get punished for it. And that's what Rashi says in Vavam and Aleph, that the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach are still intact. There's still a moral imperative on the non-Jews to keep them. They're just not mitzvah oseh, or basically God took down the level of reward that they will receive for it because they were wantonly violating those Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Again, we've discussed many of these issues back in Bava Kamma, Kiddushin, and in Sanhedrin, but just quickly to review, Gadol mitzvah ve'oseh is because they're always worried about not doing it. Or the nature of a person is to reject when they are commanded to do something. People want to do things on their own, and therefore they reject authority. For one of those two reasons, gadol mitzvah v'oseh, either because they have all the worry of being mekayemet, or the problem that authority makes people rebellious or pushed back against it. Or the deficit is what, like the Rambam says, about the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, which is that if a person just does the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach because they want to do it, that's not considered doing the Tzivui Hashem. The idea of doing a mitzvah is to do the Tzivui Hashem, and that's what makes it so special and so significant, is that you are uniting yourself with the Tzivui Hashem. So when it's mitzvah, then what you're doing is under that rubric of the Tzivui Hashem and has the ruchani implications of that. Now then, if you just do it because you think it's the right thing, or of your own volition, that doesn't necessarily put it under that Tzivui Hashem, or have that ruchani impact that you would expect, because it didn't originate from Hashem. Number two is, with regards to him being compared to a Kohen Gadol, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, that the reason they picked Kohen Gadol is Mishub Piv Yakrahim Ipnimim, The Torah is more precious than jewels. But over there, the Gemara Darshan is about Pnimim. Afilo lifnai v'lifnim, even the one who enters into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, meaning the Torah is more precious than the Kohen Gadol. And that's why they picked it. But he points out that a Mamzer Talmud Chacham is greater than a Kohen Gadol. So the fact that he can attain the status of a Kohen Gadol is still limited in some ways, because the Mamzer Talmud Chacham is still greater than a Kohen Gadol Am Haaretz. It is something that is positive, but not as positive as a Jew who learns Torah. Then the Bali Tosafot raised the issue that we mentioned in Sanhedrin, which is, how can it be that he's Osek B'Torah when the Gemara in Sanhedrin says any non-Jew engages in Torah is Chayav Mita? So the Bali Tosafot here and there mentioned that it is B'Sheva Mitzvot Shelahem, that they're learning the Torah is about their Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. And that's what the Torah that they're learning about, not our Torah or the Mitzvah that we deal with, rather the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. That's one way to deal with it. Other answers that we spoke about then were maybe it's the difference between Torah Shebichtav versus Torah Shebe'al Peh, or the Meiri does have a bigger chiddush, which is the fact that they can learn Torah as long as it is Lishma. But if it's not Lishma, it's done as an intellectual pursuit, then they're Chayav Mita. But if they do it for the right reasons and to reach the Emet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's considered fine. So he has the most expansive view of what it means here that a goy can learn Torah. The last thing I want to note is the problem that the Bali Tosafot raised here. And you can see on the side here that there are multiple Tosafot throughout Shas that try to deal with this issue. Which is over here, the Gemara says the word Adam here means a generic person, not a Jew in particular. The problem with that is that we darshan in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, which says, Aten sonit son mariti Adam atem. And from that, the Gemara darshan, Atem kruim Adam. Jews are called Adam, but non-Jews are not called Adam, and therefore, Tumat Ohel, that is found in Parshat Chukat, which says, Zot Torah Adam ki yamut bohel, is only a reference to Jews, not a reference to non-Jews, and therefore Tumat Ohel is only by Jews. From there you see the word Adam is specifically about Jews, and not about non-Jews. So Rabbeinu Tam, he brings over here, makes a distinction between Adam and Ha-Adam. He says Ha-Adam is generic, whereas Adam is referenced specifically to Jews, and that's why it says, L'shei say Adam, Ha-Adam, V'chai Behem. Tosafot in other places in Shas gives two other possibilities. One is that maybe we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon, who's the one who says that Tumadol only applies to Jews and not to non-Jews. And this is, in essence, a rejection of that view. And then in the end, it's Adam is a generic reference and not just to Israel. Or the other answer he gives is, it depends what you could have put there instead. If you could have put, as the Gemara points out of here, Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim would have been fine in the Pasuk. The fact that he used Adam instead of one of those words, that means that the word there, Adam, must mean more than that. On the other hand, there's sometimes where the word Adam is used where you couldn't use the word Israel. In that case, it only refers to Jews. So in a case where you could have used an alternative word and used Adam, that means it's coming to include more than just the Jews, it's including non-Jews as well. Now then, when you use the word in a situation where you couldn't have had an alternative word, then that Adam is a specific reference to Klal Yisrael. And that's the way that the Bali Tosafot will deal with this all over Shas. All right, we're going to stop here 11 lines down on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph.